Okay, good morning. I think we're going to get started so we can finish before lunch. Welcome to part one of the symposia. This was really a joint effort with Eaton Codling and Gilbert Sigwa, who is the current ASA chair. He helped us tremendously put together this symposia. You might have seen there are two parts. This is the first part. This deals with the on-site wastewater treatment systems. The second part of the symposia is this afternoon, which deals with animal manures. I would also like to thank SAID for co-sponsoring this symposia. In the first part, there are seven presenters. We have Paul Withers from UK. He's going to give us the UK perspective. I'm going to give an overview of the symposia. James Bradshaw and Dave Radcliffe from Georgia are going to talk about nitrogen. Mary Lusk from Florida is going to talk about pathogens. And we are glad that JT, as she prefers to call her, or Jennifer from Colorado School of Mines is here. She's going to talk about trace organic chemicals or emerging contaminants. And you might have noticed that in the program, we had Juan from Georgia. He couldn't be here, but we're glad that David Lindbo from NC State agreed to give us a presentation. This was really last minute, and I'd really like to thank Dave Radcliffe for helping do this. Okay, so getting started with the symposia, what I'm going to do is really give a very broad overview of what are the on-site wastewater treatment systems, or septic systems as we usually call them. Working with industry partners, I realized that how much they hate the idea to call them septic tanks because it just doesn't convey the message. So they really like to use the word on-site wastewater treatment because there is a lot of treatment that really goes into that one. If you look at septic system or on-site wastewater, it really has two components, septic tank and treatment, source well treatment unit. There are quite a few options that are available to treat on-site wastewater. We'll talk about wastewater flow and quality and some pollutants that are of concern in septic systems. So if you look across in the U.S., one out of four households, they are on on-site wastewater systems. And the annual discharge from these systems is around 8 billion gallons. That's a lot of water going right in the subsurface. Most of these systems are what is called conventional septic systems, and I'm going to talk about them in a little while. There are some other options where there are site limitations, and with an increased concern with the pollutants, there are quite a bit of advanced on-site wastewater systems. So if you look at conventional septic system, really has two parts. One is a septic tank that receives the wastewater from a whole household, and then a drain field which disperses the wastewater that has gone through a septic tank. If you look at septic tank, this is another picture that the wastewater from the household gets here. The solid settles at the bottom. That's the main idea. That also helps facilitate some degradation. The scum, which is the light component, fat, oil, and grease, they settle at the top. And then the wastewater exit from the outlet. It goes right into drain field or in soil treatment unit. Different states have different guidelines, but one of the most important is separation between groundwater and drain field, which could be 2 to 4 feet. This is a minimum depth that you need to have. That's in the health code and most of the department. Most of the convention system work well, except when there are some limitations on, and especially if you have it, because there's a gravity flow, there's no pump that can limit the delivery of effluent. And as a result, there could be uneven distribution that can lead to problems with clogging in the drainage pipes, and that also will reduce the treatment that effluent needs before it recharges groundwater. Another issue could be the areas with slowly permeable soils. They might not be able to handle large amounts of volume. Now, these are site-specific conditions. In most cases, most of the systems we have in the country are these types of conventional systems. To overcome some of those problems, when you have higher elevation, another option is low-pressure dosing, which really is a conventional system, except that you have a pump. And the idea is that this will distribute effluent evenly, and it can also take at a higher elevation if needed. Now another option is mound system, especially when the groundwater is shallow. And we have a lot of these in Florida. So you need to achieve the 2 feet separation, 2 to 4 feet separation. An easy way to do is use a fill material, make a mound, and distribute wastewater so you will have enough separation. And if you have a mound system, you can overcome some of the site limitations, such as when you have a high water table, a shallow bedrock. If you look at the installation cost, is going to be a little bit higher than the conventional because you are trying to do a fill, and this will also require a pump so that effluent can be delivered at a higher elevation. Okay, now looking into the advanced treatment, there are a lot of options if you look at that, but this technology can be characterized into 4 main components, and one could be the source separation, and then the biological, the physical chemical processes or natural systems. So let's look at one of these technologies, source separation. Most of the research on septic systems is because of the concerns with the nitrogen pollution. And some of these toilets are common in Europe, and the idea is because most of the nitrogen is excreted in urine, if you can separate solids from liquids, then you can reduce the nitrogen concentration in wastewater. That's one idea. The other, the most of the technology is in what is called biological treatment, which really takes advantage of two, there are different one-stage or two-stage biofilters. I won't confuse you, but the goal here is that you have nitrogen in the wastewater, which is organic and ammonium. If you can nitrify the first process, which will be nitrification in the first chamber, and the second could be the denitrification. And the idea is to reduce the nitrogen that you have in wastewater. Some of these treatments work very well. The one that we have back in Florida with a bunch of different filters has shown to be very effective. We have seen nitrogen reduction up to 95 to 96% with those systems. And that's a big reduction from 60 milligrams in wastewater down to 2 milligrams. This is the wastewater before it goes into the drain field. Okay, that's just another picture of that hydrotrophic denitrification, 2 filters and drip irrigation. The other one is physical processes, which is membrane separation. Now, as you are going up, this is going to get expensive. And this is another expensive technology, but it's available. Another process is UV disinfection, which is actually commonly used in many wastewater treatment plants in the country to kill pathogens. And the UV disinfection has also shown to be effective at removing some of the trace organic chemicals or emerging contaminants. When you look at natural systems, there are also commercial available products which do the same thing that you have septic tank, pump tank, and filtration, a little bit better distribution and taking advantage of natural soil conditions to remove pollutants. Another one is constructed wetland. I'm not sure how popular these are or how many they are in the country, but they are available. When you start looking at how many companies actually make these products, it's overwhelming. The first slide, this is all biological treatment. And I'm going to flip to another one. There's another one on biological. If you look into physical chemical, there are few options. With natural systems, there are few more options. So there are quite a few ideas revolving around source separation. So if you look at the on-site wastewater systems, it seems like really simple that you have a tank that disperses wastewater back into the drain field. But over the years, there has been a lot of research in this area, especially as related to nitrogen and then pathogens. Switching gears, moving to wastewater flow, the best thing that I think we can do with the septic system is design them correctly and then site them. And if they are done that way, they will take care of most of the issues related with public health and environmental quality. So in order to design, we need to know the flow rate so that the septic tank and drain field size can be figured out. And if we also somewhat get an idea of constituents, then those tanks, they can be designed around that one. The factor that will affect flow will be number of people, the water use practices, and then the dwelling unit, where is that located? If you look at the estimated wastewater flows, and this is actually the single family water home water use, study conducted in 14 U.S. cities, you see that most of the water used inside the home is in the toilet. And then there is a cloth washer and then shower. The average, the median is around 70 gallons. Where you can see the range. This is how many gallons people are used, and this is the relative frequency of those. So it's quite variable. Each septic system is different than others, depending upon number of people and how it's designed. If you look at the hourly use pattern, that also varies. You typically have more use in the morning and evening. And the point I'm trying to make is that there's a tremendous variability in constituents that are present in the septic systems. If you look at a wastewater treatment plant, it's pretty consistent because you get water from so many neighborhoods. But in individual units, there can be tremendous variability in constituent concentrations. And that also it's also challenging when you're trying to research on those issues, that which might be the best time for you to go out and sample. Looking at wastewater quality, the main waste comes from garbage disposal, sinks, baths, toilets. So these in turn affect the chemical and biological constituents. The two important components, BOD, biological oxygen demand, and total suspended solids, is all the organic material. If you look at total nitrogen, the main source in the home is urine, and then a little bit feces. For phosphorus, it's feces and detergents and other chemicals. For pathogens, it's mostly the feces. And for trace organic chemicals, it could be pharmaceuticals and other chemicals that are present in various products. So if you try to group what's the relative contribution of these different three different segments to the BOD and total soluble solids, you can see that it's pretty consistent, a little bit more or less. And we'll talk about nitrogen and phosphorus in the next slide. So these are, again, average numbers. There's a tremendous variability, but the main point I want you to look at is total nitrogen. That's about 60 milligrams per liter. Most of that is organic and ammonium. The total phosphorus number is around 10. This number has been decreasing over the years because of the bans and detergent bans, so that's a good news. Quite a bit of fecal coliform and other bacteria, which should be there. Okay, so looking at how all these constituents present in systems can impact environmental health, that when the wastewater is dispersed in the drain field or soil treatment unit, there can be a potential contaminant plume that can go into a nearby water body, or groundwater can become surface water. And this is especially more challenging in Southeast, especially in Florida, where we have this mixes of groundwater and surface water. Now, with most of the research on septic systems has been driven with concern with nitrogen. So I'm going to talk a little bit about nitrogen. And from research, we know that there is a local and regional contamination of groundwater aquifers with nitrate from septic systems. And we also have some ideas that if you look at this number, 10 to 15, other paper that I saw, it was 10 to 90%, and I didn't really want to put that here. That's a lot of variability on how much of that nitrogen can be removed in the drain field. Some studies done in Florida have shown that there is a very limited nitrogen removal because we have sandy soils and less opportunities for denitrification. Other studies have also shown that it can be an issue in coastal communities. And another in Florida Keys, we do see quite a bit of research looking at septic systems and nitrogen. There's also a seasonality. When it rains more, drain field is out, so it's likely that that's also going to take that contaminant or nitrogen down to groundwater rather quickly. So looking at sources of nitrogen in wastewater, it's mainly toilet that contributes 78, and most of it is urine. And then the second source is bath, sinks, and appliances. That's around 17%. I was looking at these numbers, the nitrogen inputs, to put these numbers in perspective. So if you look at household nitrogen contribution, if we use the EPA's estimate, which says that each human excretes about 11 grams of nitrogen per day. And if you look at that, there's a subdivision of 200 homes in one square kilometer. you have four people in the house, they can generate around 3,000 kilograms of nitrogen. Now let's look at atmospheric deposition. If you look at the National Atmospheric Deposition Programs, these are again average numbers. It can be, these numbers can be very different depending upon where you are in the country. So same idea, if you look in one square kilometer, the atmospheric deposition can contribute 600 to 1200 kilograms nitrogen. Now let's move to the fertilizer application or egg production systems. We might be adding a lot of nitrogen to grow crops, which is needed. So if you compare these numbers, it's relatively higher, but our objective is different. Here we are applying these nutrients so that the plants can grow. So most of this nitrogen, depending upon how efficient that system is, it can be taken up by plants. When it's already down in the subsurface, the plant roots don't get there. So it's important to keep in mind the contribution of septic systems. We have a lot of controversy, big controversy in Florida with the Wakiwa basins. I don't know if you guys know, which is a spring shed close to Orlando, and there are a lot of septic systems. There's a big concern related with contribution of septic systems to springs pollution. Okay, so I want to introduce two terms here. One is I'm going to use in the next few slides, raw wastewater. That's a wastewater that's coming from the home before it goes into the septic tank. So after it goes to the septic tank, it's called septic tank effluent. Again, there are so many terms. Different people use them interchangeably. But I'm going to use raw wastewater and septic tank effluent. Okay, so if you look at nitrogen farms and transformations, we got raw wastewater coming from the home and septic tank effluent. Most of the nitrogen in the raw wastewater is organic. So as it goes into the septic tank, there is some settling and degradation. That organic is converted into ammonium. So ammonium and organic, these are the two forms that will go into the drain field. So if you look at fate of nitrogen in the drain field, it will look at ammonium. Most of that, most of the ammonium when you have distributed in the drain field, that will go through different processes, different mechanisms, and one most likely would be conversion to nitrate. And other less likely will be microbial uptake. And plant uptake will be very limited because most drain fields are much below the plant root zone. There can also be some volatilization, especially in alkaline soils. If pH is higher, it can also happen in septic tanks because they have a high pH. So the ammonium, most likely it's going to be converted to nitrate. So when you have that nitrate, three things can happen. First scenario is most likely because it's mobile, so it's going to move downward. The second scenario is also possible in some conditions where some of that nitrate will be converted to nitrate gas. But you need to have right conditions, anaerobic, microorganisms, and organic matter. There could be microbial uptake. Somewhat plant uptake again will be very limited unless somehow roots get there. Okay, switching gears, looking at the septic tank effluent, phosphorus, and water quality issue. Unlike nitrate, most of the inorganic phosphorus will be fixed in the soil. Phosphorus is not really a concern in groundwater, but if it moves into surface water, it can become an issue. So some of the research has shown that phosphorus can contribute from 4 to 55% of total phosphorus in the lakes, in the freshwater lakes. And you see a lot of state agencies, not really a lot of published work because these guys probably do more work on septic systems than academia, I suppose. Looking at sources of phosphorus, the most important source, again, is toilet, and it's the feces where we excrete nucleic acids and adenosine triphosphate. Bath sinks and appliances, this is the detergents or chemicals that are present. Two main farms, most of the phosphorus is orthophosphate, around 85%, and about 15% organic. If you look at fate of phosphorus, it's going to be sorption most likely. There can also be some precipitation depending upon the soil pH and other cations. Organic P probably will be converted to inorganic. Okay, so the take-home message is that septic systems, phosphorus plumes can develop over the longer duration. A septic system might last 10 to 20 years. So over the years, it can potentially move. The recommended practice is that increase the distance between drain field and water bodies, which is not always possible. Okay, so I'm not really going to talk about pathogen. Mary's going to talk about this. And two main issues with pathogen is water quality impacts and then disease outbreaks. Trace organic chemicals, Jennifer from School of Mines, she's going to talk about it. But you can group them in a way that you want to, pharmaceuticals and other chemicals that we have or we use in the homes. Research has shown that these are present in wastewater at higher concentrations than treatment plants. So I just want to close with this, that if you look at expired medication disposal habits, around 35% of those medicines are actually flushed down the toilet, and other 54% are trash. So it wouldn't be surprising if we see them in our streams and other places.